for amber waves of grace, for purple mountains' majesty above the fruit.
Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and, well, the views of our guest this evening, who's Jerry Smith, and we're going to tell you about Jerry in just a moment or two. I've known Jerry for a number of years. He's written a number of books. We've interviewed him before. But his latest book, Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature, is a fascinating, fascinating book. In fact, we're going to carry the book. I think it's well worthwhile having on hand. And I just wanted to open with some remarks that were made by William Cohen, who was the Secretary of Defense back in 1997. And this is what he wrote. There are some reports, for example, that some countries have been trying to construct something like an Ebola virus, and that would be a very dangerous phenomenon, to say the least. Alvin Toffler has written about this in terms of some scientists in their laboratories trying to devise certain types of pathogens that would be ethnic-specific, so that they could just eliminate certain ethnic groups and races, and others are designing some sorts of engineering and some sorts of insects that can destroy specific crops. Others are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. So there are plenty of ingenious minds out there that are at work finding ways in which they can wreak terror on other nations. It's real, and that's the reason why we have to intensify our efforts. Well, you'll learn this evening that even back in 1970, why Zygmunt Brzezinski in his book Between Two Ages was writing about the techniques that would be available, where they would be able to create storms and droughts, and I have a copy of the book. I've checked it out. In fact, actually, Jerry quotes that phrase right here in his book on weather warfare. Jerry Smith, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, hi, Dr. Stan. Good to be back with you.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a fascinating book, and I think you've outdone yourself in this. And of course, it goes into chemtrails, it goes into HAARP, it goes into so many of the things that are out there, and you almost don't know where to start. But this thing of weather warfare is a very real issue, isn't it?
Absolutely. Let me amplify on that quote that you just read. William Cohen said that from his position as the U.S. Secretary of Defense at a conference on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, and U.S. strategy. We can therefore take it as an official United States position. It was the position of the United States of America in 1997 that there are terrorists engaging in an eco-type of terrorism. And remember, he said, others are engaging. He didn't say others might be, others could, maybe sometime in the future. He said, others are. Present time, right now, others are engaging in an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes and volcanoes remotely through electromagnetic means. If the Secretary of Defense says that, I think we should take that very seriously.
And, of course, I'm also very, very sure that the United States has been working on this technology for a long period of time, as you're going to learn this evening. And, of course, the implications for this really are phenomenal. You know, if you honestly think that America has no defense against incoming missiles, and we only have 6 interceptors somewhere up in Alaska that would be aligned against 1,000 or more Russian incoming missiles, you've got to be incredibly naive. We're being lied to. There are secret weapons that can be used against the enemy or against us. Well, Jerry, you go ahead and pick up the story there.
All right. Well, what I do with the book, Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature, is I look at four major areas. And the first first is, as I address the history of weather manipulation, environmental modification from the very beginning of the scientific era, which in the United States quite literally was the 1880s, and I bring it up to present time. And there's a very odd thing that happened here is that there is an international, a United Nations treaty prohibiting the use of environmental modification for hostile, that is, for military purposes. And the United States was actively involved in developing this technology right up until we signed that treaty, and then it vanished. It all went away. And so I examined this treaty in great depth and how this treaty is an absolute dismal failure and how the U.S. was doing all this work, spending millions of dollars a year, having there was an average of $20 million a year. In 1978, we had 700 degreed scientists working on developing this technology, and the next year, nothing, all gone. And I offer that this probably is an indication that the technology went dark. And so I cover from the U.N. treaty, try to bring it up to present time, but of course the data trail goes dark at that point. So as one area we can spot is HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. So I give an update on HARP, and I give the history of HARP up to present time, and show that the avowed purpose, the admitted purpose, is to modify the atmosphere. Now the United States Air Force says we don't want to control the weather. But they have spent millions of dollars and a decade building this one gadget whose purpose is to modify the atmosphere. And I ask the question, what, if any, is the difference between modifying the atmosphere and controlling the weather? And then from HARP, I go into some of the other things that seem to be going on, as you mentioned, chemtrails. And this is where I get really deep into the global warming argument. Because chemtrails may indeed be an attempt to mitigate or exacerbate global warming.
All right, fine. Well, I certainly think there's so much here that we really have to get into. And, of course, really what HARP is all about, it is a top secret. I mean, everybody knows about it. But as far as what they're going to do with it, how it can be utilized, why, of course, this is all secret, you know. We don't want Osama bin Laden to learn what we're really doing, or the Russians, or is it we don't want the American people to learn? We'll be back in just a moment with Jerry Smith. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest this evening, Jerry Smith, his book, and we will be carrying it called Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. Now, you have to understand that we have all sorts of secret weapons. In fact, I talked to a gentleman who's been affiliated with the intelligence agencies just a week on one of my programs, and he talked about our secret weapons. He didn't tell us what they were, but we know they have secret weapons, and we've actually had access to some information that's not widely known. Certainly Joel Skousen has alluded to this. So let's just talk about those things. At least we have some grasp at. Let's talk about the High Altitude Auroral Research Project. What is HARP? What is it really used for? Now, what they tell us it's used for, and what are its implications as far as our lives here on Earth?
Well, it's the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. It is a field of antennas on the ground in southeastern Alaska that transmits in the high frequency range. Therefore, it's the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. Active is that it's intended to do something to. It's intended to stimulate, to change, to modify. And what it's designed to actively study is the aurora. The aurora is caused by a flow of electrons from outer space to Earth called the electrojet. And the primary purpose of HARP in the original conception back a decade and a half ago was that they were going to modify the aurora, the electrojet.
Well, is this having to do with then the aurora borealis is what you're speaking of, the
exactly.
Northern Lights?
The aurora borealis is the northern lights, and the aurora australia is the southern lights.
But of course, you don't spend all the money just to modify these lights. Isn't this really a means of changing the jet stream?
It could be that the changing of the jet stream was mentioned in the original patents. Now there are a number of things that the harp builders, the harp operators say that that harp is going to, it, that they have used it for. Most recently, from 2002, DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Administration, ran the HARP project, and they admit to having done four things with HARP, and these are: one, the generation of extremely low frequency, very low frequency radio waves for submarine and other subsurface communication, and the reduction of charged particle populations in the radiation belts to ensure safe spacecraft systems operations. Two, the control of electron density gradients and the reflective properties in selected regions of the ionosphere to create radio wave propagation channels. And three, the generation of optical and infrared emissions in space to calibrate space sensors.
Well, that sounds like a lot of gobbledygook from a practical point of view. Is this really what it's all about? What would this do as far as incoming nuclear missiles, nuclear tipped missiles?
Well,
could this disrupt the stratosphere and the ionosphere to the point where you would be able to deflect them coming in?
Right. In that first point, that is the giveaway. In the first point, it says this one application does two different things. The one is it blows apart the molecules of the atmosphere, causing them to give off a stream of ELF, extremely low frequency radio waves, when the molecules are broken apart. This ELF penetrates deep into the sea and is how they communicate with deeply submerged submarines. The other aspect of this, the reduction of charged particles in the radiation belts, is because when you blow the molecules apart, you form a plasma, which is an electrically charged gas that goes out into space, and it keeps going out into space until it reaches the radiation belts, which are areas of where charged particles are trapped between magnetic lines of force in the Earth's magnetic field. And this overburdens these fields and causes them to precipitate out. That is, it causes them to rain charged particles down on the Earth.
All right. Well,
now, this plume that goes out, anything coming through it will get whacked. Anything electronic passing through this outgoing plume, this plasma created by the HARP signal, will have its electronics disrupted. And I give evidence in the book that it's possible the Space Shuttle Columbia ran afoul of this, that the HARP array may have been used to communicate with the submarine fleet, and they blew it, and literally blew it, and brought down the Columbia as an unexpected side effect.
Well, I think they must think the American people are really pretty naive. We're told, that George Bush was did away with the SALT Treaty, the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, so that we could build an atom ballistic missile defense. And then he put in six missiles now in Alaska.
Yeah, Fort Greeley, 26 miles down the road from HARP, is where the Missile Defense Agency is located. And curiously, it was part of the turf wars of Homeland Security. For a while there, Fort Greeley was Homeland Security, and all of the anti-missile missiles that the U.S. possessed, the six you're talking about, were actually Homeland Security's property. Well, the Homeland Security's been forced to give them back to the DOD, and the last official I'd heard is that another 17 missiles had been delivered to the site.
Well, even if they had 23 missiles there, the Russians, if they wanted to attack us, have over several thousand, warheads, or several thousand missiles they could launch. What would even 17 missiles do? And I believe this is really all an effort to confuse the American people so we will not know about some of these other weapons that really are very real and far more sophisticated, because the missiles we have, it's hitting a bullet with a bullet. They are not dependable. They would not defend our country. So why are they investing all this money?
It's pork barrel. It's pure pork. It's Halliburton. Burn and loot. Brown and root. It's kickback time. It's a way to, missiles are an established mainstream way of throwing money into a hole and having it end up in the pockets of your buddies.
And I think it's also to give the American people the feeling that we're doing something but they're not telling us what they're really doing. And so we blow $10, $20, $30 billion. I mean, a billion here, a billion there. Who really worries?
Exactly. You know, and this brings us back to what William S. Cohen said. Remember, he said that the altering the climate, setting off earthquakes and volcanoes remotely could be done through the use of electromagnetic waves. That's what HARP generates. This is part of an ongoing discussion in military think tank circles called the RMA, the Revolution in Military Affairs. Whenever you fundamentally change the way a war is fought, you have an RMA, like when you went from bows and arrows and swords to gunpowder. We have gone, in the last 100 years, we have gone from bullets, from weapons that could target individual soldiers, bullets, to weapons that could target whole battlefields, poison gas in World War I, to weapons that could target whole cities, atom bombs. And now with electromagnetic, with radio frequency weapons, we can now target whole continents. And that's what weather warfare is all about, is that this is an ongoing part of the RMA discussion.
Well, of course, you've mentioned here the possibility that these electromagnetic waves also can have a profound impact on the mind, the thought process of large segments of the population, of targeted populations.
Oh, absolutely. That? You know, that really was what rang my bell about HARP. I first became concerned about HARP when I read of what HARP could do, because I'd been studying mind control technology for 20 years before I wrote my HARP book, which was HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, which came out in 1998. And one of the things that got my attention was that Dr. Gordon F. MacDonald had been writing about how to use this, and Dr. MacDonald is one of America's most respected scientists, and he was a presidential science advisor on a number of White House boards, and he was a member of the Jason Group. And the Jason Group were at the very top of the R&D pyramid. It's the Jasons who really have the pulse of what weapon systems need to be built for the war 40 years down the road. And MacDonald wrote at length about oncoming weapon systems, and I believe that he was trying to give America a heads up because he knew, as a Jason, where these things were going. He knew what was in the pipeline and tried to tell us about it. And one of the things MacDonald said was that an accurately timed, artificially excited electronic stroke could, quote, could lead to a pattern of oscillations that produce relatively high power levels over certain regions of the Earth. In this way, one could develop a system that would seriously impair the brain performance of very large populations in selected regions over an extended period. And that sounded to me altogether too much like what HARP could do.
In fact, one of the quotations you have from Dr. MacDonald actually was reproduced in Zygmunt Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages, where he talks about how in the future we're going to be able to create these new diseases to disable large amounts of the population, and then you can just go in and take them over them. And they won't even know what's happened. They'll just be so ill they just won't care. And then would be able to create storms and earthquakes. And that quotation you have from MacDonald, actually, Zygmunt Brzezinski quotes that in his book, Between Two Ages.
Yeah, if you want to know what's going on, the bad guys document what they're doing. You know, the way that the Nuremberg trials worked is the Nazis were convicted on their own paperwork. And the bad guys today have not learned from that.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have read Zygmunt Brzezinski's book when it came out in 1970. And the one thing he said was, you know, we're going to control the people by using radio and television. And, of course, the anti-communist organizations I belong to were using books, and people weren't reading books. Television and radio were, of course, the way to reach people's minds. That's why I dropped out of all the organizations, and I determined that one day I was going to get out of the radio. Certainly it's all we can afford, but it's a very effective means to get people thinking. And then now with YouTube, why we can utilize the television pictures as well. Well, Jerry, is there anything else we should talk about HARP before we get onto the chemtrail bit?
Not really. When there are some points we may need to pick up and go back, but I think we've established that there is a lot to know about HAARP, and my book, Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature, is the most up-to-date book on HAARP, yet it deals with HAARP right up to this year, in which it's been under construction since 1990, and it was announced finished this year in the spring of 2006.
Well, do you think that they can actually create storms and droughts today?
I really don't know. And that's the reason I don't know is that's a very technical question. And I'm not technical. I'm a writer. I'm a researcher. I can tell you what other people have said, but I cannot look at the diagrams of the equipment and tell you what it's going to do. So I can't in good faith tell you, yes, I think this, when I really don't know.
All right, fine. Well, certainly you talk there in your book about how they're able to create snow over the Sierras, are able to create to actually stop hailstorms. Isn't this a means of modifying the weather?
Oh, absolutely. Now you've just mentioned a subject very near and dear to my heart. Off-the-shelf weather modification technologies. Business Week magazine reported in 2005 that the Chinese government were spending $40 million a year, and they had 35,000 people employed full-time in weather management. And by weather management, I mean tweaking of the clouds so as to induce more precipitation out, as you mentioned, to increase snowpacks. I live in Reno, Nevada. In Reno, Nevada, we have DRI, a Desert Research Institute, which is one of the world's leading weather modification technology centers. And the DRI has cloud seeders on the peaks of all the mountains all over Nevada, and particularly over the Sierra Nevadas in California. And whenever a storm front comes over, they crank these puppies up and increase the snowpack in the Sierras. Vail Mountain in Colorado also hires professional civilian weather modification specialists to increase their snowpack. In Kansas and Oklahoma and much of the Great Plains, there are state-sponsored and private companies. Private companies, like one huge company, is Weather Modification Incorporated. These guys have been doing it for a very long time. In fact, this actually goes back to the Vietnam War. The chief engineer at Weather Modification Incorporated has been on the Art Bell Show a few times, in which he admitted that he was one of the guys during Operation Popeye. Operation Popeye ran for almost 10 years during the Vietnam War, from 1966 to about 1972, and the purpose of Popeye was to use cloud seeding technology to induce rains over the Ho Chi Minh Trail in hopes of turning the Viet Cong resupply route into an impassable quagmire of mud. Also during Vietnam, another nastiness we did was Agent Orange and Agent White, poured by the millions of gallons.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We were talking about really practical weather modification. Apparently, they actually will have techniques of increasing the snowpack in the Sierras. They have techniques by of which they can cut back or eliminate the hailstorms, which are so damaging to the crops in the Midwest, that the Chinese are doing that. He goes, actually talks about how during the Vietnam War era, why we actually used weather modification to create storms all over the Ho Chi Minh Trail, so there'd be so much water there, why the roads going down through Laos and Cambodia, over which they were transporting the supplies that were used to kill our men, would be such a quagmire of mud, they would become impossible. And it was even quoting one of the men who was involved with that, who's appeared on the Art Bell Show, who now, of course, is employed by a company known as Weather Modification, and they actually get paid for modifying the weather today, don't they?
Oh, they do. Their website is very proud of the fact that they're one of the world's largest private contractors in that they work with governments all over the planet. They have projects running in China and Argentina and Kansas, and they're South Saharan Africa. Their website is quite a wealth of information on the subject of off the shelf weather modification, and I mentioned them in the book just to reveal that, you know, just to show that what we think is going on is a tiny piece of it. Most Americans have no clue that weather modification is taking place.
Well, can we actually create earthquakes or in any way influence them today?
Oh, now that's another thing entirely. And I have an entire section on earthquakes on demand, an entire chapter on the subject. And I show that there are at least six different ways to unintentionally make an earthquake. Extracting fluids from underground sources, such as pumping oil, inserting fluids into underground. Did it in Denver. Denver was rocked by a series of earthquakes in the 60s when they pumped waste fluids into the earth. Every time they pumped fluids in, they got an earthquake out, and they realized that they were relieving stress in doing so. When you build giant dams and reservoirs, the sheer weight of all that water and concrete has caused earthquakes. And then there's setting off atom bombs, and I have a couple of really, really telling examples of this. The best known, the best documented one is Project Faultless, which was 1968 in the Nevada desert. After a couple of decades of testing at the Nevada test site, which is altogether too close to Las Vegas, a number of tourists and casino operators were getting upset with all the shaking buildings and breaking glass from nuke shots at the Nevada test site. So they, led, oddly enough, by Howard Hughes, who was basically screaming at the NTS to stop shaking his building. They tried a nuke shot way deep in the Nevada desert. They found an empty, abandoned valley way out in the middle of nowhere, and they decided to use this test for a number of things. They wanted to set off the largest shot yet, and put it on a fault line to see if a high-yield detonation would have any effect. And, of course, the scientists were convinced it couldn't possibly have an effect, so they called it Project Faultless. Well, they put it on a fault line. That they put the bomb down 3,000 feet below surface level, set off what turned out to be the largest explosion done on mainland North America, and it not only set off the fault line it was on, it set off a fault line on the other side of the valley and dropped the valley floor by 15 feet.
And of course, these are the things we're not going to hear about. All of these experiments that they do with the military, and then of course, if they go bad, they're immediately classified forever because we can't let Osama bin Laden know what's going on, or somebody. We have to really keep this from the enemy.
It's not just the enemy. It's the lawyers of our own citizens.
I know. Well, I said that somewhat with thing and seek, Jerry. And so, really, the use of classification to conceal government mistakes and the things, the harmful things that some of these terrible experiments that they've done on our own military people, or even on the American people, if you get into certainly the Rockefeller Report, where they've actually unleashed biological diseases on the American people.
Oh, absolutely.
And of course, our book entitled Project Daylily by Dr. Garth Nicholson, we recommend to you. Yes, they experiment on us. They're experimenting on us now. A massive experiment with disastrous consequences with water fluoridation and the immunizations and the use of aspartame. It's only a social experiment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Jerry Smith, and as soon as we get all of our stations back with us, Jerry, well, let's get your website up. So just wait a few more minutes till we get around to that. But let's talk a little bit about chemtrails, because I think that chemtrails are fascinating. There are a lot of people who don't believe in them. I think you have many, many good points there and some very interesting approaches to it. So why don't you pick up the story? Are chemtrails real? Are they really spraying things in the atmosphere?
I can say that at least one... at least one theory has been extensively and expensively studied by the world's scientists. Let me say that what I do in the book, and I spend 100+ pages on this, is I divide the chemtrail contrail debate quite literally into contrails and chemtrails, and I spend a big piece of time on what is a contrail. How does a condensation trail, how does it form? What is a natural versus an unnatural? Are they a problem? The government tells us that chemtrails are an internet hoax and that it's complete nonsense and that they're all perfectly normal contrails. So I look at, okay, if the government, let's for the moment assume the government actually is not lying to us and these things really are just contrails. Are they benign like the government says they are? And they are not benign. This is a major, major problem. This is skewing the global warming climate change debate because mainstream scientists have not recognized how much cloud cover is being generated by these contrails, that we now have these persistent contrails that lasts for hours, and the perfect blue sky of morning becomes a milky opalescent white in late afternoon because these clouds, rather than dissipating, form this vast thin haze over us. Among the things that have been discovered in recent years is global dimming, that the Earth is actually receiving less energy from the sun than it used to, that the amount of sunlight getting through is less than it used to be. Now, this could be intentional. This could be a part of this alleged spraying program, in that a big piece of the concept of global
warming...
Jerry,
I'm going to have to ask you to hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Jerry Smith. We're talking about, of course, the issue of chemtrails and contrails. But before we go on, Jerry, would you like to get your web page out? And how can people get hold of you and get hold of all the books that you carry?
Well, all of my books, HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, Secrets of the Holy Lance, The Spear of Destiny in History and Legend, and the new one, Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature, are available anywhere in any major bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Tower, Borders, etc. The best for me is if you, the listener, go to your local bookseller and ask for the book. That will encourage them to stock and restock the book, which will get me more sales down the road. Best for you, if you want it autographed, buy it directly from the publisher, Adventures Unlimited Press. I'm currently working at the worldwide headquarters of Adventures Unlimited Press, and when your order comes through, I'll be happy to autograph it to you. So if you want an autographed copy, go to adventuresunlimitedpress.com or dial our 1-800 number, 1-800-718-4514. That's 1-800-718-4514. Best to do it during normal business hours, Central Time Zone. And if you want it cheap, go to Amazon.com. They got it 30% off, but it won't be autographed.
All right, fine. Well, certainly, let's get back to this issue of chemtrails and contrails. Now, contrails are perfectly normal. Now, you see the plane fly over in the stratosphere. You'll see the white streak behind it at certain times. And then chemtrails, of course, are supposedly come from tanker planes, which are actually spraying things up in the atmosphere to actually create this canopy over our society. And there are many people who believe that this is part of a plan to increase global warming, to decrease global warming, the name of Edward Teller, who had suggested apparently this is a means of controlling global warming has been raised. So I'm going to let Jerry tell you first about the contrails. Are the contrails completely, and now these are normal contrails just produced by planes flying, do they have an impact on our atmosphere because of the percolates and the other things in the jet fuel?
Oh, absolutely. What we have seen over the since 1980 is that the constituents of the jet fuel has changed, the type of engines used on the aircraft has changed with the high bypass turbofan, which is what causes these persistent contrails. Not a spraying program; it's the jet engine that does it, and the atmosphere itself has changed. If the atmosphere actually is warming, and as it warms. The warmer the air is, the more moisture it can hold, so the more possibilities you have for getting these persistent contrails. So the jet fuel has changed, the jet engines have changed, and the atmosphere have changed, all of which leads to more contrails, and that leads to less sunlight. And as you mentioned, Edward Teller, who was the father of the hydrogen bomb, and associate director of Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories, proposed that one way we could mitigate, we could deal with the problems of greenhouse gases causing global warming, is if we increase the reflectivity of the Earth, if we increase the amount of solar energy that the Earth reflects back into space, we can prevent that energy from coming in, therefore offsetting or balancing the amount of energy being trapped by the so-called greenhouse gases. Now, Teller had been being funded by the United States government at Lawrence Livermore for a decade or more when he made that recommendation. And Lawrence Livermore had already spent tens of millions of dollars investigating this idea, and this comes under the broad heading of something called geoengineering. And geoengineering is defined as a mitigation scheme that would allow us to continue using fossil fuels and creating greenhouse gases and would change natural systems to allow us to continue doing in our polluting ways. And a lot of geoengineering schemes have been proposed. Some of them are just completely whacked. The one I find the most hilarious that was seriously proposed, I mean, this was brought up by Lawrence Livermore and suggested at a meeting in the White House to the President of the United States. And this suggestion was that they would build thousands of robot sailboats. And these robot sailboats, controlled only by computers, would breeze back and forth across the world's oceans far away from normal shipping lanes, and they would have on them solar collectors to run the computers and the machinery, and they would have these fog makers. And the fog makers would turn the seawater behind the sailboat into a fog bank, which would increase the reflectivity of the ocean surface so that it would increase the amount of energy, of solar energy being reflected back. Absolutely idiotic concept, and yet a billions of dollar concept. There have been numerous, I mean many, scientific bodies, both national scientific bodies and international scientific bodies, high repute, high profile UN sponsored bodies that have looked at geoengineering schemes and said, you know what, probably the best way to do it would be if we were to inject dust, particularly aluminum or barium dust, very high in the atmosphere, up in the stratosphere. It would stay up there for a year or two, and it would increase the Earth's reflectivity by a couple of degrees, by just a couple of percentage points, but that would be enough to prevent that much sunlight from coming in and would offset. But every one of these bodies that looked at this thing said, well, you know, the problem is, if we're actually injecting aluminum and barium dust, which are biologically harmful to humans, into the atmosphere, we're going to have so many people complaining about it. We're going to have so many legal and environmental barriers. We could never do it. At least, we can never do it and tell anybody that we're doing it. And so the data trail, there are dozens of big-profile studies done that you can read the reports on the Internet. There have been major studies done looking at this, spending millions of dollars, and they all get up to the point where this would be a good thing to do, but we never could tell anybody if we were doing it. And right there it stops. And I submit that it looks like they decided, you know, this is what we should do, but we can't tell anybody about it, so we're not going to. And they are doing it, and they're simply not telling us about it. But there are some, you know, as a lifelong environmentalist, I can see many downsides to this looniness. And other scientific bodies have looked at this and went, wait a minute, whoa. If you inject the dust too low in the atmosphere, rather than mitigating global warming, you exacerbate global warming. You make it worse. And then I suggest in the book, and I suggest this very gently, perhaps they actually are intentionally increasing global warming as a pretext to build a global government around. That if you have this false problem of global warming and the false solution to it, which is this covert spraying program, you can then force the people to accept a global government. And I'm sure they think, well, if we're creating this, we can uncreate it by we just stop spraying and it goes away. But as I express in other places in the book, the idea is that it's not universally accepted that greenhouse gases are causing global warming. There may be other factors, and they may find themselves in a between the literal rock and a hard place when they stop the spraying and the heat doesn't go away.
Well, now you actually talked a little bit about whether it's a time when there really weren't any planes flying here for a period of time. Was that after 9/11 or what?
Oh, that's right. After the horrific events of 9/11, the FAA grounded all flights in America for 3 days, and so there was 3 days of no air over no aircraft over North America, like right now as we speak. It's believed that a best guess estimate is there are 61,000 Americans in the air right this moment. That's a lot of planes. That's a lot of stuff going on. When they pulled those planes out of the sky changed. The temperatures changed. They discovered that the aircraft contrails or chemtrails, whichever it is, was actually changing daytime temperatures. That the contrails or chemtrails held in heat during the night and reflected back solar energy during the day, and that there was less difference between day and night during when the planes are flying than when they weren't flying. There was huge differences between the temperatures of day and night between the two sets, and that when the planes were not flying, it got a lot colder at night and a lot hotter in the day.
In other words, what you're suggesting is that the exhaust of the planes, of the contrails, and perhaps even chemtrails are having a profound impact on our weather. And of course, there are many, many people who've actually seen these planes flying back and forth. They're not flying from point A to B. They're flying back and forth across the sky, of course, spraying something or other. And of course, people who've investigated this independently came up a long time ago with the conclusion that they were actually spraying aluminum and barium. And of course, this is the thing that you're finding in many of these government reports, talking about spraying aluminum and barium dust so that it would be up there, so that it would change the blueness of the sky and act then as a reflection, and to reflect the rays back at the sun. But of course, it would also act as a greenhouse cover, and in some respects it might reflect rays of the sun, other ways it would trap heat here on Earth.
Right, and there were lots of other military programs using it, particularly using barium. There were lots of experiments done to create artificial radio bounce spots so that the military could have tight control over communication channels. And this was an early part of what HAARP was about. And as I mentioned, the number two thing they did with HAARP was they literally reshaped the ionosphere to create bounce spots. There's a lot of evidence out there that barium releases have been used for close to 40 years now to create artificial bounce spots for communications and surveillance programs.
I think this is the most amazing thing. You see, most people believe, anybody believes in chemtrails, believes in black helicopters, and my feeling is that they have been deceiving the American people and scoffing at the people. I believe chemtrails are real, and there's so much evidence out there where they've written about this extensively and the relationship of Dr. Teller's theories. They're simply carrying out a massive experiment, not only here in the United States, but throughout the world. Can this actually influence the weather?
NASA has vast piles of proofs that this is changing the weather. NASA Langley is one of the leading researchers in the effects of contrails on the atmosphere now, and they really got into it after 9/11. After 9/11, the NASA guys looked at the satellites and saw, you know, there were a few planes flying, mostly military, and then of course there were a couple of 747s with Saudis scurrying home, and the NASA Langley guys saw these few contrails over the East Coast persist and grow into something 60 miles wide by 800 miles long in their satellite images, and they went, "Oh my gosh, look at that! I had no idea." And so now NASA Langley is really big on studying the effects of contrails on the environment, and has just gotten into the international debate over global warming, and it's decades late.
But of course, the thing is, they can't tell the American people the truth because we're not smart enough to be able to analyze these things. The elite know what's best for us common folks, and we're just supposed to subject ourselves to it, even though both aluminum and barium are harmful to the health. But after all, there are really too many people in the world anyway. Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling us from, of all places, Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing? Mike, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Stan. Can I comment on the HAARP thing?
Sure, go ahead.
There's an occultic aspect to this whole thing. The HAARP is actually located in the center of an Earth-sized pentagram. And you can see this in the attenuated information on a website. You can find it by Googling the author's name, Jim Allison, A-L-I-S-O-N. And when you, at the top of the list of your Google search will be a site named Great Circle. And so just click that, and then click part number 9. And scroll to the bottom of that page. I hope that's not too long of a rabbit trail. But if you get to the website, you'll find it. Yep. If you go to, just run through it real quick again, Jim Allison, A-L-I-S-O-N, is just, that's your search terms in Google. And then Great Circle website, and then click part 9, scroll down, and you'll see his pentagram. The 5 points of the star are occultic sites around the globe. And it's a view looking down almost from the north, from the very north, and at the center, like I was saying, is HAARP.
Well, I'm sure there's occultic relationships to so many things going on in the world today, Mike. Thanks very much for calling and letting us know. And, of course, do you find any spiritual component to any of the things that you've been writing about?
Well, of course, and I actually have a section on that in the current book. There were a number of occultic, metaphysical ultra-dimensional aspects that came up in the HAARP research when I was writing HAARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy. And at the time, it just seemed so out there, I left it out. And then
sounds like something right here on the Art Bell program.
Right, and then as I was writing this book, I decided just to to pull out all the stops, and everything I had on harp went into the book. And so I have been asked hundreds of times if there is a relationship between harp and aliens, harp and UFOs, harp in other dimensions, harp in angels, harp could harp be an ascendance machine like in Mission to Mars, the 2000 movie with Gary Sinise? Could harp be used by evil beings to prevent our ascension? And so I kind of got into that in this book. I ended it with expressing that I left it out of the last book and thought maybe I probably should have left it out of this one, too.
All right, well, we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up the program here. But, ladies and gentlemen, there is a spiritual component to everything going on today. We talk about physical science. We talk about the dimension we live in. But remember, everything is energized by these powerful spiritual forces that are directing what's going on today. I don't believe they come from outer space at all, but I believe that they do profoundly influence the psyche of some of these people who are directing what's going on today. Well, Jerry, why don't you've got the talk? You've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program here. Gee, that hour just went by so quickly.
Oh, it always does, and especially when you have a subject this complex. Again, the book is Weather Warfare, the Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature, and it's about a great deal more than just the weather and just the military. It's about the whole environment, earth, sea, and air, and it's about a whole lot of players, including academic and commercial, as well as military. There's a lot of agendas that this stuff can be used for, including financial and religious, as well as political. And I try to touch on all of those. This book is something of a departure for me in that my first book on the subject, Harp, the Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, is I went into the who and why behind Harp. I speculate a great deal on why they're doing it and whose agendas they could further and so forth. And in this book, I try to leave speculation out entirely. This is not conspiracy theory. This is very little theory, very little speculation. I just nail the facts. The facts are themselves so overwhelmingly upsetting that I didn't feel any need to gild the lily with speculation.
All right, fine. Well, I think that it's a fascinating book, and we'll be talking to you again. We've got to have Jerry on all of our programs as we explore increasingly what this is really all about, because this is long-term planning to create certainly Buck Rogers types of technology. Unfortunately, this technology can be used not only against an enemy, it can be used against the people of our nation to subject us, to control us, to change our thought process. And do we really trust people who want to keep everything secret, who have a different worldview, who have a different agenda? People like Zygmunt Brzezinski, who, along with Henry Kissinger, is certainly one of the two most important men working within the shadows today. So I think it's important that we know what they're doing. I think it's important that we can discuss this intelligently with others to try to warn them that we're in very, very serious trouble today. We are facing the loss of our freedom as we move towards a military dictatorship under the John Warner Defense Authorization Act just passed less than a month ago. Understand what's going on. Read the signs of the times. And, of course, hopefully this will tend to draw you closer to our Lord. Jerry Smith, thank you so very much for being with us. And I'm certainly looking forward to have you back on our other programs here in the next couple of days.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Stan, as always.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, that was Jerry Smith, and, of course, his book, Going Into the Background of Weather Warfare, is going to be available through Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly we're going to carry this book. I think Jerry's done a good job on it. Now, we carry the other book by Nick Begich, Angels Don't Play This Harp. So we have Angels Don't Play This Harp by Nick Begich, going into the high frequency active auroral research project. That's the high frequency active auroral research project. And then, of course, we have a 4-tape set on harp. We actually have 2 4-tape sets on chemtrails to give you the whole background of so much of what we've been talking about tonight. Chemtrails are a reality, They're a vast experiment, but they do not want to tell us common folks about it. So if you really want to get the background, we have 2 4-tape sets on chemtrails, we have 1 4-tape set on HARP, and we have Nick Begich's book, and now we'll be carrying the book, Weather Warfare, the Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. And believe me, this is long-term planning. You can go back and you can read what Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote back in 1970 in his book, Between Two Ages. And we have the book, we have the pages duplicated if anybody wants to see them, where he talks about how in the future they're going to be able to create storms. They're going to be able to create storms and droughts. He doesn't mention earthquakes, but I have no doubt at all that they can do all of these things and redirect storms. But they can't let the American people know what they're really up to today. Now, there's all sorts of treaties that have been signed against weather warfare, but you don't really think that they worry about treaties. Back at Fort Detrick, Maryland, and we have new information on this from the Washington Post, they're working on terrible new diseases that could eliminate entire populations. But don't you worry. Why, of course, it's only for defensive purposes. You have to understand that we have to develop these terrible new diseases that could create an epidemic that could kill hundreds of millions of people. We're developing them because, well, if we don't, Osama bin Laden might make them, and we have to know that what he can do, and so that's why we're creating these terrible new diseases. They tell us they'll never get out of the laboratory, but then did the anthrax get out of the laboratory and kill a couple of Democratic senators just before they got the Patriot Act passed here right after 9/11? Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, we're working with very evil and wicked people. And when you understand that, then so much of what's going on makes sense today. If you've not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to read the other things that we have available through Radio Liberty. Certainly the DVDs or videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. That's they sold their souls for rock and roll. It goes into the musicians who've got great wealth and great prosperity and great notoriety and died very young because, of course, they'd sold their souls to the devil, intentionally and knowingly doing that. And then, of course, the book by Malachi Martin, Father Malachi Martin, Hostage to the Devil. And then, of course, the four-tape set we have with Father Martin, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. Of course, you can get that in conjunction with the tape set, with the book at a reduced price. We have so much information here at Radio Liberty that you need to get to understand that this concept of another dimension is not imaginary. It is very real. If you have not yet read my pamphlets on the occult hierarchy, the occult hierarchy that rules the world. Why you need to get it? We simply quote not what I say, but what they say, because we have access to their writings. And then, of course, we hope that you'll want to get our four-tape set on Homeland Security. Our four-tape set on Is Food Enough? Or Is There a War on Drugs? Or Immigration, the Hidden Agenda. Our four-tape set on Islam, the Religion of Doom, my interviews with Craig Wynn, the four-tape set on the JFK assassination, or our update on that, where you'll learn so much more about how they killed an American president, and then they were able to confuse the American people, because they put out all these conflicting stories. Oh, it was the Russians who killed him. It was the Jews who killed Kennedy. It was Castro who killed Kennedy. It was the mafia who did it. It was the oil man who killed him. You have to understand this is all part of a program to keep you from being able to see the truth about what's going on. So pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty. We'll be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, this next hour we're going to have this Mr. Ralph Holt. O-M-H-O-L-T. And he, of course, was in the military as a pilot. He was a commercial airline pilot. And I believe he's retired at the present time. But he's written some fascinating articles that you'll find up on the Internet on what happened on 9-1-1 from the aviation point of view. And certainly one of my good friends, Craig Roberts, had, Colonel Roberts, had sent me the link, and I went to it, and then I was fortunate enough to get hold of Mr. Olmholt, and he was agreed to come on with us and tell us about his concerns about what we've been told about what happened that day and, well, the questions that he raises. Ralph, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
How is it that you got involved in this? You know, this is a... Certainly, this is something that you have to be motivated to do all the study and analysis that you've done.
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, being a Vietnam veteran and seeing the corruption that went on in that war, and whether it was the Gulf of Tonkin resolution or 9-1-1, when I saw the events unfold on that day, I knew something was radically wrong and what it, you know, probably represented, and, you know, God forbid I was right.
Go right ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was waiting for a response from him.
Well, I tell you what, I didn't punch my microphone. That's why I was talking all the time. You just couldn't hear me. I was just saying that the implications of what you're saying, and which I agree with you, I don't think we were told the truth about what happened on 9/11. And when you stop and think that actually, if it's somebody, and I'm not saying who was responsible for that, but if it was not Osama bin Laden, as we've been told, then it means that the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq, all the deaths that occurred in both of those tragic countries, and the quagmire that we're involved in now, and the civil war that's going on in Iraq, and the increasing tension in the Middle East, all of this is unnecessary. All of this is engineered, but it all goes back to what happened on 9-1-1. So tell me what your thoughts are about what happened that day and why you question the official conspiracy theory, which is that 19 Muslims came to America, hijacked four planes, and crashed them into three buildings.
Well, Dr. Stan, I apologize to anyone I might offend by this, you know, next comment. But one of the problems that you have is that the particular purported terrorists did not have the skills and were not likely to have the skills to pull off, you know, what happened there. Now, at the World Trade Center, two airplanes hit the buildings. But I can tell you from having flown the 757 in particular that it took a tremendous amount of eye-hand coordination to hit those buildings at any speed, let alone at the speeds which they actually hit them. That is not the deed of somebody who checked out an Cessna 172 or a Cessna 310 and read the manual on how to, you know, plug coordinates into the computer. It just simply can't be done. And if you take a look at the events which did happen on, you know, 9/11, you come up with the fact that, you know, there were some professional pilots at the controls of those airplanes. There isn't a single record of a ticket being bought, a reservation being made, a name on a passenger manifest.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, Ralph, you pick up the story there. What you're saying is that, of course, that it took a great deal of skill and capability to hit the buildings, but could this have been done certainly by electronically? And is it like you'd fly a model plane electronically on the ground?
No, there are two things that I would have to illustrate on that. Number one, that there's no record that anyone has ever attempted something, you know, with that fine coordination. Now, certainly something like a cruise missile could do it, but not an airliner. And secondly, the visual which was captured on the second airplane impacting the second tower shows a definite human error and a correction made. And so that says right there, just, you know, from my visual ability, say, oh my gosh, you know, the guy's, you know, let his nose drop and then he corrected himself on his way into the building. So that tells me it was hand flown. And so while the technology is, you know, available, it would take tremendous amount of, you know, practice, shall we say, to, you know, get it down to the point that you could rely on it. And certainly if it was electronically done, you would have, you know, the pilots calling on the radio for help. They would, you know, go to the extreme of, you know, shutting down the engines if they had to keep from hitting those buildings. And there's nothing to suggest that there was any human interference there.
All right, so basically you feel that the Muslim hijackers, the names we've been given, really did not have the training to fly those planes because it would take a great deal of a hand-eye coordination to accomplish what they did. And what about that plane that came in and hit the Pentagon? How could they possibly have, you know, come in that low and certainly at that inclination?
Well, Dr. Stan, one of the things that stood out, you know, instantly in my mind was that you had three are called least risk impacts. Those aren't the deeds of terrorists. And when you go to the Pentagon, the first thing that you discover is that there isn't any viable evidence of an airplane having hit the building. You don't have as much as, you know, burning jet fuel to say that it hit the building. There's no forward-moving damage. The one major piece that they have on the lawn is the wrong color, from the wrong location, and doesn't have the damage that it should have.
I thought one of the things that was so interesting in your analysis was that you commented that, you know, if there was any wreckage, it would have some markings on it, that there are all sorts of markings on the metal of the planes that identify the plane. Is that correct?
Yes, you have two things. One is called a part number to make sure you don't, you know, put the wrong part in the wrong place during the assembly. And for replaceable components such as engines, generators, radios, and things like that, you have a serial number, you know, attached to a part. And as you know, General Nelson pointed out, there is no suggestion of any number on any of these parts. And that's just, you know, one of those, you know, things in the heading of impossible.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Ralph Umholtz, who's been a military pilot and a commercial airline pilot, and certainly the plane that was supposed to hit the Pentagon, if you've seen the pictures, the opening is right at the ground level. Ordinarily, if that plane had come in, wouldn't it have hit the second floor much higher than it would have if it had? How would they come in right exactly at ground level? That doesn't make sense.
Well, it not only doesn't make sense, it's, you know, physically impossible by virtue of a feature of aerodynamics called ground effect. Essentially, what happens is that, you know, a cushion of air gets, you know, developed underneath the wing equal to approximately half the span of the wing. And without, you know, pushing the nose through that, in which case you'd have the nose of the airplane digging a trench up to the building, you're not going to get below that. Not to mention the fact that there were obstructions in the way which were not harmed. And, you know, again, there's no forward-moving damage there. And so to sit there and say, well, wait a minute, this terrorist was so nice that he hit the least risk point on the Pentagon. And he did it so perfectly, you know, we're really kind of grateful to him that it wasn't worse.
You mean he hit the area where there was a construction, so there weren't that many people there.
No, exactly. There's hardly anybody, but that site is also ripe for, you know, staging a scene, which is what they did.
Well, of course, the thing that always disturbed me is what happened to the engines. You know, certainly you got two great big engines, and they weren't going to just sort of dissolve.
Well, the engines, in theory, you know, could come apart and penetrate the building, but they would leave a tremendous hole. Now, you have, you know, some holes that, you know, you could possibly get one engine into, but there's no suggestion of, you know, the second engine anywhere, and that one engine core that they have in there, I'm not so sure it was, you know, even an RB-211.
Or did they actually find an engine there?
They had part of an engine there that, you know, I'm not sure what engine part that is off of, you know, which manufactured engine. It's the, you know, combustor section of, you know, a turbine engine, but, you know, it's very difficult to tell which engine it actually is.
Well, the thing that has always disturbed me about the Pentagon, as you pointed out, is there was no great explosion of jet fuel. Certainly we saw the great explosion when the plane hit the North Tower, and we saw when the plane hit the South Tower. Well, we did not see that great explosion, even in the videos that they've released. And the government has the videos, and they refuse to show the videos that show any planes. I mean, it's taken 5 years. They've delayed and delayed and delayed. I think they've released two or maybe even three videos, and none of them show a plane hitting the Pentagon. Why would it take them 5 years to release the videos?
Well, simply because there isn't one. Now, the one videotape that they have shown repeatedly, you know, is a joke, and that's the one with a huge fireball. And if you go to the post-impact photos, you know, this fireball didn't burn a single blade of grass. And it's the time date stamp on, you know, the video is a day and a half later than the event. And so that's on par with the, you know, fat boy that's supposed to be Bin Laden in the, you know, videotape they used as evidence to go in on the war crime, you know, attack on Afghanistan.
You actually, I haven't seen that film, but it's actually got a later date stamped on it than the date of the attack.
You know, exactly, a day and a half later.
Why would they release a video like that?
Well, because some of the people involved were, you know, literally dumb as rocks.
Well, of course, you would think, of course, the American people must be even dumber because so many of them have accepted this story. That they were able to fly this plane. It was really an amazing, amazing feat to fly that plane. But as you point out, it would take a very, very skilled pilot to do it.
Well, the other part of it, Dr. Stan, is the fact that, you know, if you go into the studies that they've done, for example, the Stanley Milgram experiment on, you know, punishment and nigh unto death, you know, emulating, you know, can, you know, civilized people be conned into, you know, killing other people on, you know, whatever principle, which was a college experiment, and they found out that they would do it for $4.50. Now, that's back when it was about $20 an hour, our money today. But if you take the sum of 911 and trace it backwards, the one thing that it comes back to is Mein Kampf and all the Nazi accomplishments.
Well, certainly your notation as far as the lack of any recoverable evidence there, certainly the whole idea, we're told that the plane hit the building. It went through layer after layer after layer of reinforced concrete. Even came out on the other side of the Pentagon. I don't know what three or four layers later. And yet, of course, the plane just sort of burnt itself up. Did they ever claim that they actually got any DNA evidence from the passenger on the plane or supposed to be on the plane?
Yes, they did. In fact, it's a tremendous paradox in the official claim that the fire was so hot that the plane was totally destroyed. And DNA is destroyed at 212 degrees, you know, boiling water temperature. And so if that fire was actually that hot to destroy the airplane, there is no DNA evidence to be had. And so they told on themselves there. And if you go to the actual, you know, measurements of, you know, the biggest hole that they have one that's approximately 17 feet wide and, you know, doesn't account for the damage off to the right-hand side of the central, you know, impact point. And they want you to believe that the wings just folded up. Which is fine. I will give them that. I'll swear on any Bible they put in front of me that they're telling the truth if they can tell me what did the damage off to the right-hand side where something destroyed 3-foot diameter, you know, reinforced concrete columns.
What you're suggesting is that supposedly is that where you think one of the motors might have hit or what?
No, there's no way that you can account for the damage. You know, you have, you know, these, approximately 6 layers of, you know, 3-foot diameter reinforced steel columns supporting, you know, the second floor. And, you know, you take a look at the actual photos of, you know, comparable damage in, you know, the area that didn't collapse, and you have missing concrete, and you have rebar in there, which is, you know, swayed. It's not impacted. And so how in the world do you account for that damage with, you know, without anything other than a high thermal device such as thermite? And that's not a plane crash.
Well, the thing that bothers me, of course, that picture of the inside of the ring of the Pentagon, it's almost like a symmetrical rounded hole. and yet there's no evidence that whatever went through there and made that great big hole left anything inside there that you would expect if it made enough impact to make that great big hole. There'd been something beyond that on the inner part of the Pentagon, and I never saw anything there, did you?
Well, if you take a look at that hole, that thing is so tattletale, you know, it's amazing that they even tried it. Because you've got a perfectly round hole, approximately 14 feet in diameter, and if you take a look at the damage, you can see the dimpling from your dead cord around there. And if you take a look at the structure which remains on the inside of the building, you take a look at that and say, wait a minute, whatever damage happened from the outside. You take a look at the, you know, aircraft debris on the outside, none of it is deformed as though it, you know, hit anything. And, you know, you're going to knock down two layers of brick and, you know, with 150 pounds of aluminum here and tell me that it made a 14-foot hole? No way on God's green earth.
Well, I mean, there's just so many inconsistencies there, and it's very, very disheartening, as you imagine. You know, what really happened there? And, of course, did they really have the DNA of the passengers? And how could that be if this plane just was so hot and it completely vaporized and there was no wreckage inside? Was there supposedly any wreckage left inside? Do we know?
Well, Dr. Stan, the whole issue about the Pentagon and Pennsylvania both is that there's no suggestion that an airplane hit either one of those sites. And yet you have, you know, two missing airplanes, you have two sets of passengers that are missing, and if they didn't scan the data on the DNA, how did you arrive at that DNA without butchering, you know, bodies? Wherever the actual airplanes ended up. It's a macabre, you know, it's disgusting.
Well, of course, the thing about the whole idea that this plane, the Flight 93 in Pennsylvania, just nosed down and crashed into the ground, and I've seen pictures of that great big hole, and there's nothing there but a great big hole. There's no airplane wreckage.
No, there are just a bunch of small parts there. There are a handful of, you know, big ones that, you know, could have, you know, gotten there, God only knows how, pick up, you know, dropped out of the back end of an airplane. But the one thing that, you know, the Pentagon and Pennsylvania have in common is the same, you know, character of small parts that you could put in your pants pocket, you know, with very rare exception. They pulled all of that airplane out in your water buckets. And so if you take a look at that, the one thing they have in common is a C-130 that flew overhead, you know, both locations. And if you track the flight plan of the C-130, he would have to have known where the, you know, impact site was going to be, which hadn't happened yet, and had to have, you know, navigated straight to it. And my estimation on it is that that C-130 was scattering, you know, parts of airplane out the back end at both the Pentagon and Pennsylvania.
Of course, they're describing it actually, you know, this almost 8 mile or certainly debris field surrounding the flight where 93 went down, which certainly you'd find very hard to believe if the plane really nosed down and just crashed into the ground. I mean, how would you have an 8 mile debris field?
It can't happen. Now, if you had, you know, a major explosive device down below there scattering stuff, that I could buy. But, you know, you still don't end up with, you know, the 8 mile, you know, debris field, you know, unless you, you know, account for that with, you know, papers that just, you know, drifted in the wind.
Now, what about that engine? Wasn't one of the engines a couple of miles away, something like that?
That was approximately a third of a mile away from the purported, you know, impact site, and no way to account for it. Now, Dr. Stan, one of the major things that, you know, stands out about Flight 93 is that they recovered, you know, the flight recorders from 25 feet below ground. You couldn't get a 50 caliber machine gun bullet that deep into the ground, and these things came up, no deformation to talk about, and they worked. No way on God's green earth. It can't happen. And the 6,000-pound engine bounced into the woods by a third of a mile, you know. And, you know, this is the stuff of your midnight comedy on an X-rated channel.
Well, I think it's really so tragic that most Americans don't really want to think about the possibility that we haven't been told the truth, because the alternative is almost too horrible to contemplate. And yet I think we have to be objective, and we have to look at the evidence, and there's so many things that, I mean, one only has to look at Building 7 coming down, and if you watch it a couple of times, you realize this is a controlled demolition. Now, I don't even like to talk about the Twin Towers coming down because there's so much confusion, but there's no confusion about Building 7. If you watch Building 7, well, you see the center of the building, the roof began to cave in before the building comes down, that you do that, because if you don't do that, why, the building will fall out. You have to collapse the center of the building so it'll fall in its own footprint, and that's just what happened to Building 7 later in the day. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Ralph Almholt. Ralph, what are your thoughts? What are some of the other things that really made you very, very concerned about what had happened that day?
Dr. Stan, the major thing that concerned me was that everything was directed so quickly toward one mission, and that was to attack Afghanistan in particular. And Afghanistan, if anyone had been following that history, knew that the CIA led the Taliban, they led bin Laden into the overthrow of the Russian influence in the area quite successfully. And the Taliban went into the backdraft syndrome, that they rebelled and said, we're on our own, we'll make our own decisions from here. But if you get into the history of Afghanistan, you find out that the Taliban had shut down the opium fields. A major part of the world's heroin supply comes out of Afghanistan. And with that, that was the one deed that really cost him. And while we would not want anyone to be related to production of that particular drug, Afghanistan was world famous for it. And when the Taliban shut it down, they had to be taken down. But from my own experience in Vietnam, having seen the heroin trade over there that the CIA was up to their ears in, I knew darn well, that, wait a minute, there's only one thing going on here, and oh my God, please don't let this happen. But it did.
And of course, really, for most of the Americans have forgotten Vietnam. Oh, there's a wonderful book. We actually have gotten a whole flock of used copies of the book called Kiss the Boys Goodbye by Monica Jensen Stevenson. This book has been suppressed for many years because it deals with the CIA involvement in drugs and drug smuggling in Vietnam. And that may be one reason why they kept the war going so long. How did you happen to run into this whole subject of drug smuggling over in Vietnam? I don't think that most Americans understand that the CIA is involved in drug smuggling. They're involved in drug smuggling, and the DEA and the FBI are trying to fight drug smuggling.
Well, I was in Vietnam in 1971 when the heroin was probably at its peak. And the... when I was briefed coming into country, the commander explained to me that anyone in their right mind knew it was the CIA supplying the heroin because of the funding cutbacks that they were getting out of Congress for the wrongdoing. And it was one of those issues of it's something that everybody knows, we don't discuss it. But I was around those kids, and I ended up in the hospital in Cameron Bay, and they had Ward 17, which was a barbed wire nightmare to get in and out of, which was concentrated for the drug patients being medevaced out to the States. And when I was finally medevaced out, I was one of two patients on a C-141 who were not drug patients. It was that massive an airlift.
Well, Chris, that must have been rather disillusioning, going over there to fight a war and then realizing that your own intelligence agency was involved in smuggling drugs.
Well, what's worse than that, Dr. Stan, because the other thing that had come out by then was that the war was all about offshore oil, which the Vietnamese have been drilling for quite a while now, but they don't have a market developed yet for it. And the major effort over there was all the civilian contractors, to include most of the major companies that are involved in this so-called rebuilding of Iraq. All the bulk of them centered in Texas again, and so it was just one big cash flow for the guys back in Texas. And so it was a matter of forget about fighting communism. You're not doing that. You're supporting
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment, Ralph. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris. Ralph was a pilot in Vietnam, and apparently he was told by one of his commanding officers that this is really all about drugs, and well, we're not going to talk about it, but you might as well know the CIA is involved in drug smuggling. And of course, Ralph became quite aware of that in Vietnam, and he realized, of course, the lie of what it was all about as a pilot over there risking his life. And yet, of course, we weren't fighting communism, and those of you who heard my discussions realize, of course, that Vietnam was a great diversion to keep us from seeing what was going on here at home. Of course, Ralph points out that many of the same corporations were involved over there financially, rebuilding the area. Of course, the same corporations that are involved over in Iraq today. It's like deja vu all over again. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you'd like to talk to Ralph. But it's simply how disillusioning it is when you're, you know, in the military, and you suddenly realize that all of your idealism, you're fighting for America, for the flag, for mother and apple pie, motherhood and apple pie, and yet, of course, this is really not what the war is all about. Do you think the average person, the average fighter pilot over there, really understood what you came to realize?
Well, I was an Army pilot flying, you know, fixed wing, you know, small, you know, twin engine types. But, you know, the military, you know, overall, you know, when I was over there, was, you know, keenly aware of it. This was the time when the Pentagon Papers, you know, had come out. William Kelly had just had his, you know, trial for the My Lai massacre. And, you know, the whole, you know, morale over there at that time, you know, was, you know, just totally, you know, disillusioned. And when you deal with a war zone, everyone has their own form of insanity that they just, you know, kind of, you know, drop in. It's their, you know, denial mechanism. It allows them to function on any kind of a normal basis, if, you know, that can be called in a war zone. And so everybody was kind of the same mindset, and it was just one of those things that we accepted and, you know, didn't discuss that much. It was, you know, just that bold-faced.
And you have to believe in what you're doing, and just as the young men over there in Iraq today have to believe in what's going on, and they have to believe that they're fighting for America. And, you know, this is why, certainly, I think that it behooves us here at home to try to get them out of there. And everything that's pointing is that they have no intention of pulling them out. This Baker Commission, we've just seen the report come out. Oh, yes, so we're going to, and maybe in 2008 we're going to think about getting some of the men out. But we really can't pull them out now. And I'd like to say, why can't we pull them out now? Certainly this war is going to continue over there because they look upon us as the occupiers. We are occupying their country. The Iraqi people are not stupid. They know we're occupying the country. We know we're over there for the oil. And, of course, there are other reasons why they're as well. They don't understand, of course, what a great diversion that is for the American people, while our attention is focused on what's going on in Afghanistan and Iraq. We lose our freedom here at home, and we're losing it very, very rapidly. Well, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Are there any other things about what happened on 911 that you think would be important for our audience to hear?
Well, 911 was basically an aviation event, and the one thing that, you know, stood out about 911 was that the FAA was running the whole show. Now, from past experience, I knew that, you know, the FAA was so corrupt that every one of the turkeys could, you know, get a good night's sleep on a corkscrew. They were so crooked. And so to see the, you know, security set up, you know, that if you even accept the official position, you know, then the FAA set it up. They had control of the fighters, which did get launched. They saw to it that, you know, they didn't get anywhere close to an area before the supposed events took place. And, so the whole thing, you know, was just, you know, epitomized as a gross, you know, government corruption, you know, which spanned a tremendous amount of agencies.
But then why hasn't anybody come forward and talked about it? I mean, you would think that some of the people who know what happened would have come forward.
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I think they're terrified to come forward because, you know, people disappear. In the anthrax, you know, attack supposedly afterward, you know, microbiologists were disappearing left and right. And, you know, that was another fake attack, you know, as nearly as I can tell. And so when it comes to someone within the FAA, for example, that were in control of the airplanes or saw stuff on the radar scope or, you know, knew where the data was, you know, it's a matter of, you know, this could cost me my life. And I suppose that, you know, some people were advised, you know, specifically that in the process. And I don't blame them for keeping their mouth shut. You know, that's dangerous information.
And I really think, unfortunately, that is really very, very true. In fact, my latest newsletter deals with what's happened to some people who have come forward and tried to tell what's coming, happened, or certainly have studied this, and many of them have been forced to leave the country. One of them, Mike Rupert, just a few weeks ago was up in Canada fighting for his life with failing liver, failing adrenal glands. Was he poisoned? Well, we don't know. But of course, he's extremely ill, and we owe Mike a debt of gratitude. for the information he brought forward. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Ralph Olmholt. How do you pronounce your last name?
Olmholt.
Ralph Olmholt, and of course we're talking about what happened on 9-1-1. And of course Ralph's looking at it from the point of view of a pilot, and it's certainly one of the things he had picked up in the as a flight, I guess it was a 175 is coming in to hit the South Tower. You commented that he drops his nose and then he pulls it up again. What was that about?
When you go to do a steep turn that is an angle more than 30 degrees, gravity, tends to drop the nose. And so to do a well-coordinated, turn, you would roll the airplane over in a bank and pull the nose back to keep from losing altitude. And so the visual, capture of that was that the nose did drop, but then the pilot raised it back up again, indicating that the autopilot wasn't working. It was a hand-flown impact.
All right, fine. That's something certainly I don't think I wouldn't have picked up at all. I don't think the average individual would have, but I'm sure a pilot would be able to see that. And then, of course, it almost looks like he didn't hit the building squarely. He actually hit it almost. He hit it way over in the side there.
Yeah, the pilot almost missed it. In fact, they nearly did on both of them. And at those kind of airspeeds, that's not a big target.
Well, of course, but when you're actually making a landing, you've got to line it up on the field. Is it that you're going much slower then? Your plane is slowed down as you're coming in for a landing? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. The typical landing is around 140 knots, which is about 160 miles an hour. And so those airplanes were going upwards of 300 knots. And so the eye-hand coordination, is, just massively different at those kind of airspeeds, not to mention the anticipation that whoever was at those controls knew that they were looking at their last seconds on Earth.
All right, and so some people, of course, have suggested it was done by remote control, but you think this was actually somebody was at the controls, we're just not sure who exactly it was.
Now the biggest indicator again is that there were no calls for help. And, if it had been, an electronic takeover, the pilots have, many, many ways to defeat that. And, one of the first things that they would, go to is, to, scream for help to at least let somebody know that, there's something wrong here. We don't know what it is. We're working on it. And there was nothing to suggest that. Absolutely nothing. No transponder code, no radio call, no nothing.
Well, of course, if somebody was going to try to actually take over the plane. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Ralph Olmholt. Ralph, do you have a website? Would you like to get your website out, your other information? I found your information fascinating.
Yeah, the easiest way is to go out to Google and type in Skydrifter, one word, Skydrifter, and that'll take you right to it.
All right, this is Skydrifter, and you'll find the website is quite fascinating. And, of course, we were simply talking about the details of handling the plane. And I was simply asking Ralph if somebody was trying to hijack a plane, wouldn't you actually, of course, just flip the plane over onto its, throw the people off balance? What would you do if you were at controls and you knew somebody was going to hijack the plane or try to hijack it?
Dr. Stan, there are normally, some massive indicators that something's wrong. You get a call from the flight attendant, you get the wrong knock at the door, you get somebody attempting to open the door. And, it's possible, in those days to have, gotten a common key that would have worked on any, airliner, at least in the United States, and opened the door. But the first thing you do is, take a look around to see what's going on, tell the person to get out, and when, they don't, it's as simple as, yanking back on the controls, pushing forward on the yoke to throw them off balance, tell the co-pilot, take care of it, and, again, get on the radio and start squawking, the emergency code on the transponder.
And so this really didn't happen on either one of the planes. They didn't actually ask for help because they kept talking about it. Of course, we know the planes were hijacked because the transponders went off and we lost contact with them. Now, we're told that there was conversation recorded on the flight recorders of plane 93, of flight 93, the plane that went down in Pennsylvania. Do you think that was contrived? Certainly they could have done whatever they wanted to with the tapes to confuse us.
Oh, exactly. You know, what does it take to reproduce a tape like that? All you need is, flight recorder, and you can, put in whatever data you want, and tape records it. And again, the recorders were supposedly recovered from 25 feet, which, if they had been found, they would have been crumpled into a mass that was, virtually, useless except for identifying the orange color of the black box, as they call them. And so the whole issue of the flight recorder and, the recordings and everything else, it has to be a total scam, any way you look at it.
How about the black boxes, which supposedly were not recovered there in the Twin Towers? Would those actually have been able to withstand the intense heat of the fires there?
In all likelihood, they would. The recorders are located in a spot on the aft end of the airplane, where fire is not likely to happen, but even where it is concentrated, that fire didn't it burned out very quickly, and so they wouldn't be subject to the kind of heat that would destroy them.
All right, fine. Well, what about, of course, we really don't know what happened in the buildings. We're told, really, at least what the information we have is that the fires were not that hot. That some of the firemen actually had called down and said, "Oh, this looks like it's going to be easy to take care of. Let's just get a couple of hoses up here." So we keep getting all this conflicting information, and then we get certainly some stories that the black boxes were found, and then we get other stories the black boxes and the Twin Towers weren't found. And I almost have a feeling they're intentionally trying to confuse us. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's exactly the point. There's as much disinformation out there as there is, information pro and con. And, you go back to the fires, and one of the biggest keys that you've got in that whole issue is a Pulitzer Prize photo of a blonde standing in the impact hole of the first tower, looking down for rescue. There's a second picture available that, confirms that it is, in fact, a woman standing there in white pants. They aren't even smudged with, soot. And so you have to ask, how cool, was it? And the answer is somewhere under 200 degrees, which isn't going to affect steel. Now, whatever temperature the steel was heated to, it cooled down, and there's no reason to think that 47 steel columns would have, just simultaneously crumpled the way they did.
This is the thing that, of course, really bothers me, is that, certainly when you realize that these buildings were built to withstand, intense heat. They were built to withstand intense winds. They were built to withstand the impact of a plane coming in there. And instead of having an independent evaluation of what happened, it was a government-financed evaluation. And I know Dr. Stephen Jones, who's been looking into this, wanted to see the information that they have, because they have a lot of classified information. They told him he could see the classified information, but he'd have to promise never to reveal anything he learned from seeing all the classified information. Why would they have the information classified 5 years after the attack? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it does. If you examine the formula for mind control, which I reduced down to presentation control equals emotional control equals mind control. So if you put a person into a data loop that they can't escape from, then there's nothing to present on the other side. And so while all the facts are supposedly known, all right, fine, I'll give you those 19 hijackers. Now let's get to the truth. They have no reason to deny any of that truth. Absolutely none, if their story was correct.
And, of course, the disquieting thing is that, first of all, some of these people, there was one of them, of course, one of the so-called hijackers, had actually attended the Monterey Language School out here in Monterey Bay, just across from where we live, and the actually commanding officer over there, Lieutenant Colonel Butler, had written a letter to the editor of the Monterey Herald saying this was an inside job the president knew about it, because one of the hijackers had been in our classes here at the Monterey Language School. What would one of these vicious hijackers who snuck into our country secretly so nobody would know he was here be doing going to the Monterey Language School? Of course, you can imagine what happened to Lieutenant Colonel Butler after that.
Now, the system doesn't take any prisoners. And, you know, Dr. Stan, the most amazing thing is, you know, that we've seen this stuff before, you know, particularly the perpetration and the cover-up from within the United States government. Oklahoma City wasn't, you know, particularly different. You know, that was an inside job. The 93, you know, World Trade Center bombing, the FBI paid for it. And, you know, the, TW-800 was, you know, one of the major cover-ups that, you know, you can't ask for more corruption from a government than those kind of items. America's seen this before. This is nothing new.
But people don't want to think about it. This is the big thing. We'd far rather live in our comfort zone and want to believe everything's all right, or it's got to be all right, or something's got to happen so that we don't have to get involved. But you've gotten involved. You put your neck on the line. You put your name out there and put up a website. Have you had any problems at all from coming forward?
No, to be perfectly honest with Dr. Stan, I'm surprised I haven't. There are many mornings that I wake up surprised to still be alive because I've been, you know, one of the biggest voices out there by virtue of the fact that you can't get an airline pilot to come forward, you know, the way I have and say, you know, yeah, I saw this, that, and the other, and this doesn't fit either. Now, they're just not out there. And the fact of the matter is they've got some psychological, you know, tactics out there that go into, you know, a science called coercive persuasion, which is the Jonestown cult mentality. And if you can imagine being able to manipulate mothers into poisoning their own children, then, you know, expand it a little bit, come back to 911, and is it so difficult to, you know, pull something like that off and have the public accept it?
Well, I think that's exactly what they've done. I think there's an element of fear there for people who really do know what's happened. I think there is an element of I think there's almost a, like a blindness, an intentional blindness. What really pleases me, though, is certainly some of these polls that suggest that it's certainly fairly close to 50% of the people do not believe the official government story. And I think that is phenomenal. I think that that may well be one of the reasons why the Republicans lost control of the House and the Senate. Enough people... Well, they're not going to come forward and say, but they voted against the Republicans, not for the Democrats, but they voted against the Republicans because they know that the current administration is lying about what happened that day. And the fact that we're able to get this many people this soon after that tragedy, I think, reflects the power of the Internet. The videos that are out there, the little organizations all across America that are showing pictures, showing motion pictures of what really happened. I think the power of the videos that are posted on the Internet, where you can actually see Building 10 come down, Building 7 come down again and again and again until you can actually anticipate what you're really seeing. And because it happens so quickly, you don't get a chance to analyze it the first time, but you see it several times, you come to one conclusion. There's no other conclusion. Building 7 was a controlled demolition. And if Building 7 was a controlled demolition, then the others had to be controlled demolitions too.
Well, exactly, Dr. Stan. And, you know, the major, you know, issue that, you know, people need to go to is the old American thing, you know, I'm sorry to say, follow the money. One person, you know, had the financial interest in all three buildings, collected insurance money. The insurance company didn't rebuild the building the way, you know, if your house burned down, they'd rebuild your house. He just walked off with the money. And so no one sees anything wrong, you know, in this picture. If you go to, you know, the capture of, you know, Larry, you know, saying, you know, it's been a terrible thing, you know, maybe we'd better pull it, meaning, you know, demolish the building. The building was on fire. Now, can you imagine sending a team of firemen in there with explosives to demolish the building as though the fire department's in the business of, you know, blowing buildings up?
Well, I think, you know, one of the most interesting things about that was, of course, when you first heard that, him saying that, we're going to pull the building. And that, of course, because everybody believes, he was saying, we're going to just, you know, blow the building up, which I think is what he meant. Then they suddenly come out with a motion picture starring John Travolta about a group of firemen, and one of them gets trapped in the building and he can't get out. And, of course, John Travolta, the fearless fire chief, says, well, we're just going to have to pull the building, meaning we're going to pull all the firefighters out. And, you know, probably 50 million Americans saw that motion picture, and they implanted in their mind the idea that when you say pull the building, means you pull the firefighters out, not that you take the building down. And it was amazing how they created that, in my opinion, that motion picture for television shown on one of the major networks with a well-known star, John Travolta, to implant in our mind that Larry Silverstein didn't mean we were going to explode the building. He meant we were going to pull the firefighters out of the building. You know, it's amazing how they are able to convince the American people that truth is falsehood, that black is white. And so many believe because they want to believe rather than face the truth.
Well, anyone, you know, with any political savvy knows that Hollywood, you know, controls an awful lot of, you know, the perception control on, you know, nothing less than propaganda. So whether it was, you know, the World Trade Center movie or Flight 93, you know, so much hogwash out there, but, you know, it sold. You know, you got to give them that. They were successful.
They certainly were. That Flight 93 was the official government party line. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to Ralph Ohmholt, he's certainly been very courageous in coming forward as an airline pilot and just talking about the fact that there is no way that the inexperienced people could have flown those planes and did what they did at the speed that they did. It would be very difficult for a trained pilot who is used to flying those planes to accomplish these goals. So we have not been told the truth at all about what's going on. So certainly, are you affiliated with any one of these organizations working out there? You're sort of working on your own.
Well, basically, I'm working on my own. I've affiliated with, you know, many of the organizations such as, you know, Scholars for the Truth, and lacking, you know, any major educational credentials, they, you know, end up being an associate member. And but, you know, most of the time what happens is that, you know, my expertise is, you know, normally regarded as being aviation. And so few people are aviation savvy who get into this that there's not much call from these organizations to get to the forefront of it.
Well, the important thing is we're just getting the information out, and I think more and more people are becoming aware, and they're going to the websites. And, you know, so many people, and I hear them saying, you know, I didn't really think much about this until 6 months or a year ago. And then I saw pictures of the Twin Towers coming down. I saw pictures of Building 7. I think that Building 7, really, that is certainly the smoking gun. I think if they hadn't taken down Building 7, most people might have believed them, but there's no way you can look at Building 7 coming down without realizing that is a controlled demolition. Well, let's go to Rich, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Rich. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, Dr. Stan. I agree totally with Building 7. It was just amazing when I saw that. I thought that's conclusive proof right there. And my question to your guest is, where do we go from here? What do we do next? Is there any way of subpoenaing some of these people in government or in the stock exchange companies like Merrill Lynch, finding out who are making these short trades?
Well, what you run up against is such a total corruption of the government that, direct appeal to, you know, any legal source, you know, is, you know, almost a waste of time unless something really gets reversed. And so my encouragement is to, you know, contact, you know, whatever political figures you know and say, I'm operating on one theme next election. If they're in, vote them out. And the other thing that you can do is, an active, you know, event is to quit spending. You know, vote with your dollars. You do that every day. Every minute of your life, you're voting, you know, with your dollars. And people pay attention to that. You know, your opinion, you know, they could care less. But your spending habits, that they pay attention to.
What exactly are you referring to there?
You know, save your money. And, you know, tell others, you know, hey, you know, if you want to make more money, quit spending. And after a while, when the spending habits, you know, start to show up, you know, on the bottom line, and they monitor this, you know, literally minute by minute, and, you know, like with Walmart found out real quick when people quit spending there that they had to change their ways. Oh, hey, can we get Christmas back in here, please? And it works.
You mean like boycott the economy?
Exactly.
Rich, of course, the one thing that may very well, the only thing that's going to stop this juggernaut is that the financial system, of course, implodes. And there's a possibility that it will, because, of course, they're on very tenuous grounds. They fought this whole war in the Middle East on borrowed money. And, of course, we're having to borrow between probably $3 to $3.5 billion every single day to just pay our debts. And we're giving money away like it's going out of style. Everything is being done with borrowed money. And, of course, if the people quit spending their money, if the economy begins to contract, why, they're not going to be able to keep this ship going. They're not going to be able to have their new world order. As long as we play their game, we lose. What we need to do is begin thinking independently.
Yeah, what I'm thinking is happening is the American taxpayers are paying for the occupation of Iraq, and then on the other hand, the oil companies are profiting from the free oil they're getting from Iraq.
It's not free.
And it's just a big transfer of taxpayer dollars into the oil companies' profits.
Exactly.
But it's much more than the oil companies. This whole thing fits together. It gets into banking. It gets into production, military production. It gets into this dream of a new world order.
Okay.
A new world religion. Hey,
I appreciate your program.
Bye-bye. God bless. Well, Ralph, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Rich? Did we lose our guest? I'm sorry, Ralph.
Yes.
Oh, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, Dr. Stan, what I would like everyone to know is that 911 and beyond is all happened on a plan that, for all intents and purposes, was constructed by this entity known as the New World Order. That's an end result. It's a network of different political influences from the Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderbergers, Trilateral Commission, and God only knows who else. But they have this idea of a global conquest and global management system, and they've publicized their intent in such documents as the Project for a New American Century, books such as the Pentagon's New Map. Grand Chessboard by Brzezinski, Bush's National Security Plan. The evidence is all over there, and you can take a look at the global events, such as the global drug trade, for example, and see how it's orchestrated for one purpose, to get all this money, all this power, and direct it accordingly. Now, when we go down to the bank, in the old days, you borrowed from the bank, and then sooner or later it was, it's all most, insurance company money. And anymore, I'm convinced that a lot of the money that we borrow for our homes and our cars comes straight out of the drug trade. And we're looking at, peak economy figures. We're looking at, cheaper prices on things. Everybody in America is, loving it. And, it's going to come to an end one of these days. What we're looking at, in terms of, this whole post-911 thing, are war crime invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan both. But people don't want to go to the Geneva Conventions. They don't want to go to the UN Charter and read what's actually there. The UN Charter embraces all of the Geneva Conventions, not just the first three that the U.S. claims that they observe. It embraces all of them. It embraces the Nuremberg precedents, which, among other things, prohibit such things as, preventative war. There's no such thing as, I think they're going to attack us, so we'll get them first. That went out with, Hitler's invasion for good reason. And so if, the world as a whole doesn't get into this and realize that the United States of America is out there committing war crime invasions with more on the, drawing boards, the Abu Ghraib prison, issue, the Gitmo prison issue, it's a Gestapo force in every sense of the word. Now, just because it's a little bit lesser, scale than what we've, seen in, Nazi Germany, for example, doesn't mean that there's a trace of innocence involved there.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's been Ralph Umholt, and I certainly agree with everything he was saying during the break about so much of what's going on is, certainly being fostered by the Council on Foreign Relations, the globalists. And we are engaged in war crimes by launching preemptive strikes on sovereign nations. And one day, America's going to have to pay a terrible price for what we've done. And the American people are going to have to pay a terrible price because they've sat back and allowed it to happen. And men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Well, we're out of time. God bless you. We'll look forward to getting on our programs, and I'll give you a call, and I want all of our audiences to hear your message.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Good night, and God bless
you. Good night.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, this is a very, very courageous gentleman, Mr. Ralph Olmholt, who's been on the front lines of the battle trying to get this information out. Well, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and quite frankly, we need your help. And if you would like, of course, to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, well, I would appreciate hearing from you. If you're thinking about laying in emergency supplies, and we hope that all of you are, because you're going to have to make preparations. Very difficult times lie ahead. Why, we do actually have access to a line of freeze-dried food and other long-term foods for storage. Hopefully you'll have to store them for a long time, but I really fear that we are moving into a period of chaos and crisis here when, of course, the attack comes on Iran. There are going to be terrible consequences. If you'd like to lay in a store of either medical supplies or food supplies, or get yourself a Berkey water filter so you'll be able to have at least clean water, why, certainly give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. It'll help us, and it'll help you. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you have not yet seen the 4-tape set, we have a 911 update. If you haven't seen the videos we're carrying, we're actually carrying 5 videos. You can get them individually or together. You can get Terror Storm, 911 Mysteries, 911 Press for the Truth. And that's the story of the Jersey girls and the 4 women who lost their husbands in the Twin Towers. And, of course, their fight to bring out the truth. It's an excellent video. And then, of course, Dave Van Kleist in Plain Sight. And lastly, The Day That Changed America Forever, put out by our good friend David Wagner. Excellent DVD. Why, they're all available independently, or you can get them all together at a special rate. That's the 9/11 DVD special. But you need to get this. You need to get the information out. You need to reach others. And you need to ask questions. Why did Building 7 come down? How could those passports have survived? The passport from the North Tower, the passport from Flight 93. How come those passports survived and nothing else survived? And if you begin to ask these questions, why, of course, you'll hopefully begin to come up with some answers, and the answer is it couldn't have happened that way. So certainly the passports, Building 7 coming down, and then, of course, the one thing is that they had totally suppressed the information for both the first and the second investigations of 911. As to the military exercises that were held that morning, the military exercises that simulated the hijacking of planes. In fact, at one time that morning, and you'll find this in the article in Vanity Fair magazine for September, why the commanding officer of NORAD said, we were tracking 29 hijackings. 29 hijackings. We couldn't keep track of them or figure what was going on. Who was implanting all the false images on the screens that was being done to confuse the people at the FAA and NORAD? And then there was a stand-down order, too. And who was responsible for that? Well, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. And, of course, be sure to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.